The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Something in Dutch. I went to Amsterdam to find out how to pronounce Anna Marie's name. And guess what? It was a success. I got drunk on a boat in the canal. Did I say it's Annie's Girls? It's Annie's Girls. It's episode 500, whatever. And a trot. sank 00. Something. Can you tell it's been a minute since I recorded? Listen, I'm here in the cloth. I'm icing my back. What a journey. So I have been out of clothis, shall we say, for a couple of weeks. I went to Paris. Then I survived Rome. Then I went back to Paris. Did a day in Amsterdam, back to Paris for more, and then here I am. And I thought to myself, okay, you know, I stored up like a little chipmunk, like a squirrel. I nutted up some Andy's Girls episodes for the first part of the trip. I actually think I dropped more than the normal 800 a week. And I brought my recording equipment with me. I did, in fact, record a Patreon episode with my friend Greg, who I had the pleasure of staying with in an Airbnb in Rome with some sewage drain issues. Sort of fit the theme of that part of the trip. But I recorded an ep with Greg, which was real fun because if you followed my journey on social, you know that I was attention pickpocketed in Rome. That's right. A gentleman stole my phone and I demanded he give it back, which he did. We had a little bit of a therapy session. But then I was like, okay, and I'm going to like watch Beverly Hills. I'm going to catch up on Beverly Hills and also Miami, but also Beverly Hills again. And just time, it's one of those things when you're in Europe. For the Europeans listening, I mean, bonjour to you as well. But it was not that kind of trip. I mean, I was off gallivanting and eating stuff and walking and going to the ballet at the Palais Garnier, which I'm pretty sure is not the way to pronounce it, but is in fact the inspiration for one of my least favorite musicals, The Phantom of the Opera. So I was off doing my merry little thing, went to Cézanne way too many times, a store that is in fact available for purchase here in New York City, but had to go in Paris. So I just was off living my best life, having a lot of champagne and dairy and gluten, which had varying degrees of success from my tum, and did not have a chance to record. And then when I got back, when I flew back after four flights and two trains and the merry-go-round that was this fabulous trip, I thought to myself, okay, you're going to sleep the night that you fly in and then you're going to catch up on Beverly Hills and record some episodes. But my body just didn't want to do that. I got a little tuckered out, which is weird because I am spiritually mid-20s plus, but my little spirit was like, no, nay, Dame Galley. It's good when you're speaking in third person using your Instagram handle. That's not a crisis. You just need to sleep for a couple days. So that's what I did. Although when not sleeping or when trying to go to sleep, I started to watch
Love is Blind season 6. I think it's because I knew I didn't need to focus on it and I would need to focus on Beverly Hills. So I don't want to say that I like mistreated Beverly Hills. I just do want to say that Love is Blind is so odd that it did help me with like a melatonin 3 to 5 milligram induced nightmare situation where it did help me sort of collapse on top of myself when I was trying to catch up on what really truly was like very little sleep over the last 2 weeks. So maybe that's why my body was like, burp, burp. So the plan is, so next week you're getting like 100,000 episodes, but the plan for this weekend is me catching up episode by episode and then dropping AGs. So this episode is me having just watched the Beverly Hills Reunion part. Oh my God. Wow. C'est bon. And then I'll watch Duh. And then I'll watch Miami part. And then I'll watch part Duh. And so I'm going to be dropping these puppies like there's no tomorrow. Just to acclimate what you guys are already very caught up on, but I am not. And so I hadn't watched a single second of Beverly Hills before watching part one tonight, but I had seen some social that, you know, content creators in the wild had been sharing, including this whole thing about a text that Kyle had sent Dorit, but I hadn't read it in full, but I had an understanding that like there's a text that Dorit shared and seemingly a conversation that was happening from Kyle, I guess, in real time, but also content creators and also the greater audience of, was this an intrusion of privacy on Dorit's behalf? And something that I said on social when I was like turtle timing in Marais or whatever, was that I thought I would have a controversial take, but it didn't really, I just checked to make sure I was recording. She's back. That I thought I might have a controversial take, but that I should like truly per usual go fuck myself because I hadn't seen the episode. So like while I didn't think the opinion would necessarily change because I thought it was like just based on the philosophy behind the conversation, I wasn't guaranteeing that an opinion that I might share on AG would be the opinion that I thought at that point that I would have. Spoiler alert, it's the same opinion. And so I felt like this was a controversial take, and I think it is. And let's just preface, because you haven't had an updated episode for me in a minute, that you what the fuck was that? That you guys know Kyle's in my top five. You know I love Kyle. You know I have truly zero problem you know, criticizing her, but also I understand her perspective, and I'm a Kyle defender at many points, but I'm not a purist. God bless if you are genuinely. I think we all have our people who we just kind of stand for and who we empathize with and who we understand. And listen, I'm not Dorit's number one fan. Dorit was tough at many points in part one. I was so confused about her getting an IV in the trailer. I don't even think that was for drama. I think she just needed some vitamin C, which like why you couldn't do that at any other point. I mean, I don't know anything about vitamin drips, but I assume if you got it 12 hours before, it would kick in just fine. So like some of her choices in getting ready. Also the outfit. There's a difference between fashion and style. And I think Dorit errs on the former and doesn't spend enough time on the latter. And it was a tough journey for me to try to focus on what she was saying and not the outline of the ensemble. But anyway, so the ep begins and Dorit is saying that, you know, the night before Kyle had reached out to her and that Dorit felt like Kyle was trying to silence her, that she thought it was manipulative and calculated. And I have some thoughts, but first I just want to read the text. So this is the text that I guess Kyle was shocked and horrified to see air on the show. Which Bywig Hello Drama was able to screenshot. So shout out to them. So this is the text, I guess, that Kyle had sent to Dorit after months of silence, but she just tried to, you know, sometimes you get a little, you'll get a little vulnerable the night before a reunion. You start to think of like, where are my friendships? We gotta check in. So Kyle texted Dorit and said, "Hi, I've been trying to reach out because I know we are in a weird place and it really bothers me. And it's not even on the show. I wanted to explain where I am at and why I have been distant, but my hands were tied. Of course, some interview comments hurt my feelings and created more issues for me, but I'm used to that and could get past it in time. I also reminded myself that you didn't know what I was going through with Mo at the time for most of these remarks. But then I heard some things that you said about me off camera that hurt me deeply, and I wasn't even able to say what I had heard or from whom. It was one of those things where I wished I just didn't know at all because I wasn't able to share, and yet I was left hurt and couldn't even try to work through it with you. And I know you will be frustrated and want to know what and who said it, but I can't. It's as frustrating to me as it will be to you. Trust me, I have gone through such a hard time, Dorit. I've been in so much pain I can't tell you. Never have I felt so low. And I know you're also going through a hard time. Normally, I would have reached out to check on you, but I was hurt and very depressed. I've spent 30 years with Mo, married 28, and I have no idea how to live without him or how to navigate through life on my own because I have so much on my plate for tomorrow, and I know you do too. I love you, PK, and your kids so much. I've been thinking about you a lot and hoping you aren't struggling too much. I don't want to lose someone else in my life over a TV show. They don't even know we're going through a hard time, so I don't see the need to bring it up there. I should have just said something sooner, but I honestly haven't been strong enough. But relationships and you are more important to me than RHOBH, and I don't feel like bringing it for the at our expense, especially when we have enough battles to handle as it is. Anyway, I would like to sit down and talk after we get through tomorrow. Maybe have lunch or dinner when you can. If you want to talk before tomorrow, I'm around. I would give anything not to go and have to do this. I don't know how much longer I can do this show. It's so toxic and creates so much anxiety for me. Anyway, let me know if you want to talk. XX. Okay, so this is one of those examples, I think, of many things can be true at once. And I am sure that Kyle feels all of these things. And I do also, you know, trigger warning, agree with Dorit. I think this was to reach out after months of silence. Allegedly, they hadn't spoken since, I think, December. So month plus, depending on when this was. The sort of like when it was sent is grayed out, but I think it says like around end of Jan. So there had been a significant period of time in which there was apparently like complete silence, plus the stuff that was being said, you know, sort of lobbed back and forth between the two of them about what they considered the level of intimacy and strength of their relationship, the reality of it, the impact and potential illusion of reality TV and how close they were and everything else. To send her this, and for Kyle to send this the night, the most important part of this, sorry to the content, but the most important part of this is that it was sent the night before the reunion. That's like the most important part, because to me, it is inherently manipulative. It does not mean that Kyle doesn't feel it, but Kyle knows this show better than anybody else on that couch. And for her to send this the night before to try to sort of apologize to her friend, but also be like, I apologize on your behalf for the things that you said that upset me and the fact that you weren't aware of what I was going through with Mo, which I didn't tell you at the time. So, I mean, for her to say, you know, I wish we had a chance to talk before this, she could have reached out to her at any other point. And to say, I have so much on my plate and I know you do too, and I don't want to add on to it, is being said by someone who understandably is going to be on the defense. Like if Erica Jane is going on Watch What Happens and being like, you gotta light her ass up, Kyle has an understanding, especially if there were decisions and choices made that Mo would not be at the reunion, which will continue to annoy me until the absolute end of time. Like the fact that Kathy is, I guess, going to be at the reunion. I, again, we'll watch part two and then discuss it, but not even Denise. Like, who's making the decisions here? Truly, what's happening? But for Kyle to send this and be like, I wish we had a chance to talk, you know, if you want to talk before tomorrow, I guess. So in the next several hours, or go to lunch after or something, maybe we can have lunch or dinner when you can. That could have happened in the several weeks preceding sending this. And to say, I don't know how much longer I can do this show, it's so toxic, I'm sure she feels that, but it's just, it is an oddly timed, I want to say missile, but I'm going to say message. Like, it's just, it is to me just inherently manipulative. And I say this as someone who loves and adores Kyle, but also as a result of that, I think sees Kyle. And I don't even think this is an intent and impact situation. Like, I just think it's manipulative. I think it was absolutely, if you don't want to use the word manipulative, which I feel comfortable using and not feeling like I'm saying this person is like the devil. I think people do manipulative things all the time. I don't mean to like paint her with a brush that makes her like only manipulative. That's not my version of Kyle. But you could, I guess, say manipulative or calculated. You could also do both. But if manipulative feels like too heavy-handed a word, calculated, I think, also works. I think it's strategic. I think you can feel things and feel like you wish you had this person. You also wish you had this person in your corner and have an understanding of like what the Google Cal has ahead. You know, you get that alert at like 4:30 in the afternoon or whatever of like, beep, beep, tomorrow's the reunion. Oh, gosh, I guess I got to send that text. It just, to me, it was the thing that Dorit was most right about, which truly is not a high bar. It's, in fact, the lowest of bars. But it was something that, to me, kicked off a sense in this reunion of like, just how far are we going to get with Kyle? Like, exactly where is this conversation going to go? Because is it going to be the conversation about Kyle's marriage, Kyle's difficulty in sharing experiences, Kyle's frustration with her friends asking questions, versus Kyle's history of feeling extremely comfortable asking questions, or at least saying in clips that have been distributed online in the last several days, like, well, if the Dorit stuff was, LOL Dorit, if the Denise stuff was said on camera, then, you know, there's no problem with me talking about it. Like, it's inherently contradictory and hypocritical, which I think many people are. Like, we are all, I think, inherent contradictions in some ways. There are going to be things that matter to us in ways we're just going to react differently when things affect us personally than when they affect other people. That's just the nature, I think, of stakes. But to not acknowledge it is tough. And I think that would also be one of those circumstances where, LOL, Denise would have been great to have on one of the couches, because I think that there are comparisons here that other people are not going to make, that maybe someone who has an investment in some of those earlier stakes would be able to reference in a way that Kyle would sort of be forced to hear. And so I think it's like people are not as inherently good or bad as we assume that they are or define them to be. And maybe that's why I find all things housewifery and psychology so interesting. And there is something that Erica said at the beginning of the episode that I think we saw reference, especially with what Anna Marie was talking about, which was Erica sort of pushing back on Andy for his questions and the way he said he was going to light her ass on fire or whatever, in saying, you know, at the end of the day, it's not necessarily about whether or not you had the right to ask the questions, but the fact that I have the right to feel hurt by them. Like, she had an understanding of the fact that she was going to be put in front of the firing squad. And also that she said, you know, we're all human at the end of the day. And I think that's a little bit of a reckoning, certainly for the audience, and I wouldn't even say for the cast. They are aware of their inherent humanity or vulnerability, maybe is the better term. But I think that's actually something that's sort of important to hear, because regardless of how you feel about Erica, to have someone sit on the stage and be like, listen, it still stayed with me. The fact that that day really kind of fucked me up. You know, I think that's sort of an important thing to understand. And there was a complication in watching the Anna Marie section when she was talking about the loss of her mom, because the way that Andy positioned one of the questions, and I've only seen the episode once instead of my normal 400 times, so apologies if I fucked this up, but he positioned one of the questions and saying like, and you didn't tell the other women that you were going through this, and you decided to compartmentalize the fact that you found out your mom had I think it was like stage 4 lung cancer and very unfortunately passed away. What was your decision to kind of do that? And Anna Marie's response was like, internalize it. But what she's also discussed in press this week is the fact that apparently her mom told her diagnosis on camera. It wasn't shown. Allegedly, Anna Marie also talked about it with members of the cast and did not feel like she was receiving a level of sympathy or empathy. I think allegedly there was some sort of response of Sutton being like, of according to Anna Marie, of Sutton being like, you're just using this as a defense against maybe being held accountable for behavior. And I sort of, you know, took pause at the actual questioning of Andy, because I think this is a thing that happens a lot on Housewives, where there's an understanding potentially of what was filmed and what wasn't shown, but the reality that you often have to defend is not the reality of what you experienced during filming. It's not only that. It's really the reality of the final edit. Of like, okay, well, we didn't know that you were going through this thing with your mom, so that means you didn't tell us, because the final edit didn't include this information. And I have to wonder about what an odd experience that has to be, not just for Anna Marie, but anyone on that stage or prior stages who is like sharing information that they are well aware that they shared on camera. And it's not just a matter of Anna Marie filming only with her mom, because it turns out that she did share that information with cast members during filming. But because the audience wasn't aware, you now have to defend a choice that maybe you never made of like, I'm just going to silo this away and keep it incredibly private and not share it with anyone. And it's that kind of like defending that reality while also feeling like you're the vessel only of online hate, and you're three-dimensional humanness is not being shared as a result of the final edit. I can't imagine how like defeating that must feel, because you're only getting the aftermath of like the most loaded, I mean, horrifying aspects of your character. And we saw aspects of that come out in part one. I'm not saying I'm team Anna Marie. I'm saying the difficulty and nuance here of feeling like you are stuck in this cycle where people online hate you because of behavior that was seen on the episodes, and there's some valid reason to be pissed, but also there were other aspects of your life that you filmed and made yourself vulnerable in sharing that were never shown. And then you have to sort of answer to questions of like, people's assumptions of your character, meaning in great part the audience, but also the cast is able to kind of flex and bend according to the will of this kind of persona that was crafted in large part, again, by the edit, because the cast knows you're not just this, you know, the Sutton esophagus gate. There's other aspects of you. Maybe they're equally unlikable, but there are also other aspects and things that you're also going through in your life. And to not seemingly acknowledge that at all, to not acknowledge, I don't know if there was a way for Andy to have done it. My guess is like, LOL, absolutely yes. But maybe not to be like, and you filmed this, unfortunately it wasn't shown. Just something that would make a person sort of understand that there were other things she was experiencing that she was open to sharing and did in fact share. It just didn't make the final cut. I mean, that's an argument and a conversation that people have had about Crystal, about the fact that like Crystal has shared things that and has also seemingly defended or opened up in scenes in, but the final edit hasn't shown that. And that has to be really difficult because at the end of the day, it's like you have to defend not only your behavior, but the way that it's presented and framed as storyline. And some of that might lean heavier on, you know, examples of poor character on your part than others. And for Anna Marie, I mean, like, babe, that it was not a good season for her. That's the understatement of the year. I also thought some of her responses to people on that stage were like pretty manipulative and not great. Like it was tough to watch. And it did also kind of frame for me the fact that like, while acknowledging she was going through this horrifying, deeply upsetting, dysregulating challenge in her life and tragedy going through this, her mom being diagnosed and dying of cancer, understanding and paying, you know, full respect with a lot of empathy and sympathy for what she was going through at that point and going through privately in the sense that we were not aware of it while we were watching these episodes, noting that there's also aspects of her character that to me came out at the reunion that felt cold and felt, it did feel manipulative. Sorry, word of the day. It felt like she was trying to dig deep in ways that I found frustrating to watch. And I say that also noting that like when she talked about what she's had to go through and the upset that she's faced by what I assume to be a huge, 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 huge barrage of toxicity and negativity and absolute hate on social, online, wherever else, totally acknowledging that, it's hard to then watch someone who's like taking accountability sort of for like aspects of the eating disorder stuff with Sutton. But then I start thinking, wait a second, but then I'm watching the after show where she says so much more, tripling down on the fact that Sutton isn't being a good role model to people with eating disorders like herself. So then I wonder, okay, you're going on the couch, you're doing sort of a version of what I remember Aviva Drescher doing, albeit not as sort of painstakingly apologetic. And Aviva just kind of like, Aviva's first season, her first reunion, she was like, I fucked up. You guys are the best. I suck. So sorry. You know, hate me if you want. My bad. Just trying to get to the next season. And she was just like, you know, it's on me. Sorry, guys. I kind of fucked up. With Anna Marie, there's like slight versions of that with the Sutton of it all, of like, I shouldn't have said these things that I didn't really say, but if I did say them, I certainly spent too much time on it, which is first off helpful to take accountability, right? And also a great way to quiet dissent and discourse and discussion about it if you're like, totally was on me. But then she's pushing back on other aspects in ways that like I find myself confused, and like the manipulative, if you keep saying that I called myself an anesthesiologist while also being on the couch being like, there's not really a difference between anesthetist and anesthesiologist, which is confusing to me because there is a difference. But to say that if you acknowledge the divide, you hate nurses, what? That is not great. Also, I remember that like the American Society of Anesthesiologists, I guess, as a DVR, because they came out swinging against Anna Marie. I don't know if her Nurses Association did, but honestly, they might just be too busy. Like, it is somewhat nuts for a seemingly reputable medical organization to be like, so we watched The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and we had some thoughts. But also it is kind of interesting that I guess her organization didn't necessarily step up. It's one of those moments where I'm like watching Anna Marie and I just, there is a part of me that wants to empathize with her, but she just honestly makes it so fucking hard. And the way she was coming at Garcelle at points made me feel very uncomfortable. The way that she was siding with Dorit, it's like the whole multiple things can be true at once, but you're like diminishing this other person's experience while saying that she's doing the same to your own, but we're doing this in a way to support Dorit. Like I understand that seemingly everyone on stage is saying that Dorit isn't racist, but Dorit is incapable of understanding the ways that she's spending all of her time on the definition of a Karen and not on why her behavior is problematic. Like the referencing of Priscilla Presley, who was in fact a child when she married Elvis, to do the whole college thing, I don't know. Maybe it's just me, and I'm so grateful to have had the opportunity to go to a great school and, you know, study musical theater performance, which I call my degree in thoughts and feelings, which has helped me enormously in my life. I highly encourage that if someone is considering or their loved ones consider going, I mean, I went to a liberal arts school. I was able to study a lot of different subjects and topics that were meaningful to me and also pursue a degree that I was passionate about. I am so thankful to have had that experience and to have that opportunity. But like, at what point are we past the fact that we define someone's intelligence or ambition by having a college degree? Like, I don't think I'm being ageist in saying this, but Dorit is too fucking old to be focused on someone's intelligence from whether or not they got a BA, let alone the fact that she's literally wrong. She's sitting on that stage next to someone with an advanced nursing degree and being like, I think I'm the only one that went to school. Meanwhile, Crystal went, Sutton went, I think Garcelle went. I don't think Kyle went. It doesn't matter. Erica knows the fucking, like, she seems to know literally everything. Erica is like the Ask Jeeves of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Does it matter whether or not she went to school? No. What matters is like your emotional intelligence. Like, Dorit may have a college degree, but my guess is it wasn't in African American studies. You know what I'm saying? Like, she says she went to school and God bless her for that, but she's really not well educated in matters that are affecting society and people outside of her, yes, I'm going to say it, bubble right now.
Paris is always a good idea. And when I schlep on over to Europe, to my favorite city in the world, I bring with me a few important phrases that I have learned from housewives. C'est bon, chic c'est la vie. Je m'appelle the Countess, n'est-ce pas, Luann? And while those key phrases are important when speaking to any French bravoholic for other matters of life, that's where Rosetta Stone comes in. Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including, of course, French. It features fast language acquisition. It immerses you in so many ways. There's no English translations, so you really learn to speak, to listen, and to think in that language. It's an intuitive process. You pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. J'adore Chris Manzo. Et toi? There's a speech recognition filter, which gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's convenient with desktop and app options, and it's an amazing value. Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs in life. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. A steal. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, AGs can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Today. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions. Just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code Andy's Girls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com. with code Andy's Girls for 10% off today. And thank the Jill Zarin and your life and mine. Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo. And when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth. And when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And speaking of manipulative, by the way, if we're going to have this whole side conversation about Kyle's manipulation to Dorit, listen, Kyle's manipulation to Dorit is like a Kyle Dorit issue that really doesn't affect anybody else in the cast. Dorit pretending to say that I fucking live in my bubble or whatever wasn't a direct call and response to the episode that aired that very night is insane. For her to then be like, oh, well, I didn't take it down because then I doubled down in a follow-up caption to be like, my love bubble is my family. That is so unbelievably manipulative and absolutely calculated and entirely untruthful that it's hard. It's like, this is the many things can be true at once. Like, sweetie, you got me with the Kyle of it all. I totally understand your perspective, but you lose me with all this other shit because she didn't she knew what she was saying. So did everybody else. That's why all of us in seeing that caption after the episode were like, what the fuck is she doing? People commenting, myself included, of I can't believe you're doubling down. She's seeing those comments. Bravo's social media account commented at one point with like a go queen before they realized what it was that she was referencing. And that comment was removed, rightfully so, because I think people were shocked to have an understanding of what it was that she was referencing once the episode went up. And it might have been like the day before the episode. It was certainly the week of the love bubble of it all. And for her not to change the caption and instead double down, and as she said, trying to clarify who was in her bubble, don't use the word bubble the week the episode goes out unless you want us to directly connect your social media caption with Garcelle talking about microaggressions. Like, you're too smart. We know you went to college. Where were you this day in class? Like, I mean, what, how stupid do you expect us to be? I mean, as dumb as the things that you say and do on occasion? I don't know. I think we're too smart for that. Maybe we got our advanced studies at Real Housewife University. I mean, listen, Dame Brian Moylan, founder and president of the Real Housewives Institute. Some of us are in continuing ed there, Dorit. Like, we'd love for her to show up, but I don't know. She might be late because someone's sewing her into her fucking dress. Like, it's just, it's a little nuts if you ask me. Like, she's just like, how dumb do you think we should be? And for Dorit to constantly, she did say something at one point where I was like on the ground. I mean, I wasn't. I was fully on the people's couch, completely fine, but I was losing my shit as well. When she said, like, you know, I think it was to Garcelle, but she said at one point, well, you know, I didn't mean it. So, you know, my intent wasn't bad. And then it was just like dot, dot, dot. Babe, I mean, you know, my intent wasn't bad, so the impact doesn't matter. Can someone send her a link to like any episode of the Auntie's Girl that's ever happened? Just kidding. She doesn't know what a podcast is. And God bless her for that. Honestly, it's like probably one of the best things about her. It was a wild moment. I don't know if that was at the point in which she was trying to say she was a victim of Garcelle acknowledging what every single person who watched last season felt, which was you making fun of my child being treated poorly is not a good look. Of course, I would not trust you with my kids. And to try to twist that and then do the whole it's a year later, you should get over it is such a look. And it's, again, I don't know how much of Dorit's sort of manipulation as a form of like defense mechanism. I don't know how the wheels are turning over there. I just think like they're creaky, they're creaking right along. But if we want to use comparisons, I don't know how often PK is intending to hurt your feelings in being so willfully ignorant about PTSD, but the impact certainly hurts. So like impact matters, not just in Dorit's bubbles, but, you know, the greater world outside. And it's frustrating to watch someone repeatedly be, again, just so ignorant and then try to turn that into other people's problems. I mean, it just to watch that repeatedly, the Garcelle of it all, the Crystal of it all, it's frustrating to watch because I want Dorit to like want to be better clued in, I guess I would say, but she doesn't. She doesn't want, she just wants to be, I don't know. I want to use the word like accepted, but that's not it. She just wants to have like just license to do whatever it is that she feels she can and has the right to do without any kind of consequence. And the reality is you can say, you can make fun of Bubbles. You can say a Black woman is attacking you. You can say that an Asian woman is a child bride. You can argue that you have no understanding of the history, so that means that the history doesn't exist. But there are going to be consequences for that. Like, there's going to be a follow-up based on the impact, regardless of your intent. And Dorit's unwillingness to take responsibility for that or to, I guess, give permission, like who would, honestly, of the fact that there are consequences for your actions, that's tough to watch. It's just not terribly educated, if you ask me. Again, what was her degree in? I don't think it was in thoughts and feelings, unless the thoughts are Dorit's thoughts and the feelings are Dorit's feelings and there's no room for anybody else. It's just a little bit tough. Like, it would be potentially an easier pill for me to swallow as an outsider if she hadn't put up that fucking Instagram caption, because that was, excuse me, such a low blow. It was such a low blow. It was a very low blow. And there's no other way to say it. I just don't know. And I don't know. It just felt like a little bit of a fuck you, which I don't love. But then I guess we're reaching a point where there's some sort of stalemate here. Now Dorit knows that other people went to college. So mazel tov to her for that. I don't know that her like work this season is going to give her like summa cum laude style diamonds next season. It is to me kind of funny. Kyle's referencing one of the reasons that their relationship isn't good because Dorit didn't defend Teddy Joe after everybody else on that fucking couch did. When you think of what Teddy Joe is saying in real time, because Dorit saying on that couch and being like, sitting on that couch and being like, yeah, Teddy and I are like IRL really good friends. We know that. I don't want to give this guy the time of day. That I honestly understood. Several people were defending her. She probably felt like this is stupid. It's already, people have already said stuff. Like, let's move along. Honestly, if you look at that clip that they showed from the BravoCon panel, which I was at, but if you look at her, she looks like she's about to say something into the mic and then they kind of move on. So that to me is a little bit of a nothing burger. Also, Teddy Joe's the worst. So kudos to Dorit for like shutting her fucking mouth for the third time in her goddamn life. But to know that Teddy Joe is going on two T's and a Teddy Joe in real time and saying, listen, world, it's Teddy Joe. Have you eaten breakfast today? No. Great job. And also, Dorit doesn't have any friends on the show anymore because Teddy Joe was doing her level best to push Dorit out. And I'm watching this episode where Dorit's like, yeah, I love Teddy. Little does she know. Little does she know that Kyle's just setting up the ball that Teddy Joe's gonna hit while yelling at you for looking at a carrot. I mean, it's just so much. The Kyle Teddy of it all, I'm not saying this. This is the jet lag speaking. I don't mean this, okay? This is the, I understand the impact, but, and I don't intend, but maybe I do, but the impact still matters. I almost wish, almost is the operative word to focus on, almost wish that Teddy Joe was back for like a second or whatever next season, if and when Kyle returns, to just hear anyone question their relationship. Because I think it's great that they support each other. I think it's great that they genuinely are like sisters in each other's lives, all that being good. There is a sense of like such core strategy to the ways that they position their power, Teddy in the podcast universe, Kyle on Beverly Hills, that I find so fascinating because they were always kind of untouchable on the show. And because of the Fox Force, people never were really able to cut through, aside from, you know, the majority of the audience's feelings that like Teddy is, you know, not great. But to the idea that maybe someone would be able to like needle up in there a little bit and just like see the inner workings, tinker around. I would find that fascinating, but it's not going to happen. And if Teddy, God forbid, was ever back in any kind of like serious role, be it a friend of or full time, neither of which I would be able to truly, that would be a tough day for America and the greater world, honestly. And like, you know, November's looming. We got a lot of shit going on. I don't know that I can handle Teddy Joe rejoining Beverly Hills in any capacity, or also Orange County, which she's still kind of working on. Very, very odd. Anywho, it is somewhat funny to me that they still are using their power and friendship. And I'm going to use the word alliance. It's really not an alliance. I mean, it works as an alliance, but they genuinely love and support each other. And I'm glad that they have each other in their lives. I really am. I'm not saying that as an asshole. I genuinely am. I think there's something lovely about the fact that they met through the show, and there are people who've met through the show who genuinely seem to be sisters and incredibly close in each other's lives. And the fact that we haven't seen them gone through any kind of like major crisis as friends or anything else, you know, that's a great thing to see. But also, she's the worst. So there is something to me that's slightly funny about Dorit like defending her at the reunion, and then, like, literally in the last week and a half, Teddy's been like, Dorit is a loser. She's on her own. Everybody hates her. Time to go. For Kyle to have that in, just to pull that right out of, in terms of like, why aren't we getting along? Because you didn't defend my dear beloved younger sister at BravoCon when there were other issues looming, is to me kind of a joke. But moving on from that, see how I just, anytime I think about Teddy and I start thinking about carrots and things go awry. This whole Kyle, Dorit, Kathy situation is, I guess, somewhat interesting. That Kyle, I don't know how much the flashback to last season's reunion helped Kyle. I guess it did, because what Kyle was trying to say to Dorit was, I only wanted you to speak out if you were speaking out against Kathy. So that's why Kyle told Dorit to shut the fuck up. But I think what Kyle wanted of Dorit, and I guess of Sutton too, right, is for her friends to speak out against Kathy in a way that Kyle herself will and cannot. I mean, a smart thing that Dorit did on that couch when Kyle was referencing, you know, stuff that happened with Aspen, when Dorit said, what happened with Aspen? Tell me what happened with Aspen. That was very smart, because what Kyle wants Dorit to do is to bring up things that Kyle knows for the sake of her family, she cannot on camera. Kyle wants Dorit to do that dirty work. Now, why Kyle would think that anyone would be interested in doing that when she herself cannot? Like, why would Dorit need to sacrifice herself and affect a seemingly real world relationship with Kathy for Kyle to sit there and then probably not defend Dorit in response? Like, how would that play out? Kyle and Kathy would be fighting. Dorit would raise her hand and be like, by the way, this thing that you're not acknowledging, I want to talk about with specifics. What would Kyle say at that point? I'm assuming she would just continue to cry. No, I don't think she's going to be like, Dorit on camera, Dorit, thank you so much for raising these things. Like, the expectation that Kyle puts on her friends specific to Kathy, while understanding that the Kathy conundrum is incredibly complicated, why she would think that her friends would do that when behind the scenes, according to Dorit, Kyle is saying that Dorit is being hypocritical for saying things behind the scenes that she won't say on camera. Dorit is saying the things that you were telling me behind the scenes are different from what you yourself are saying on camera. So if you're bringing me new information, yeah, as your friend, I'm going to have a response to that. And sometimes being a friend is making that person who's really fucking upset feel heard. So if someone says, oh my God, my sister was such a twat and she did X, Y, and Z, you're going to be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry you had to experience that. You know, that's too much. That's a private conversation. Kyle understands, keeping conversations private, right? Like the text message that she sent to Dorit that she 100% wanted to keep private about understanding the nuances in their relationship or whatever, but also she's really hurt, but also they can't get into it. And also, why would we want other people to know that there are issues in our relationship? What good is that going to do? I mean, a little bit of good if you're Dorit. I think Dorit at this point has a vested interest in airing frustrations that she has with Kyle, especially if the conversation that Kyle's dear pal is having on her very popular podcast, the fact that Dorit doesn't have any relationships with anyone, a person could argue that from Dorit's perspective, it would be incredibly important if people feel like she's siloed and isolated to talk about the fact that other people are have a role in the fact that she's been sort of estranged. Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, why should Dorit have to sort of self-implode to show her friendship to Kyle? Couldn't you argue that Kyle should be doing the same? Like, if Kyle was a good friend, couldn't the response be like, I know this is going to be really tough for us, but I understand that you're going through a lot. I understand that, like, you know, people have said stuff about you on the show and whatever else, and I know that we're going to have a complicated conversation tomorrow. Not say we shouldn't have the conversation, but say, I know the conversation's going to exist and I hope we, like, make our way through. Not, don't say these things on camera because, LOL, it will make our situation more difficult, aka mine. Like, where's the flip side of this? Of like, yes, this conversation, if the conversation happens about the nature of their relationship, it's going to be more difficult for Kyle. It is. But if Teddy in real time is talking about the fact that Dorit, I guess that's after the reunion has been aired, so maybe Teddy feels like she can go full ham in support of Kyle than not. But like, damn, it isn't, I can't say playing fair because LOL, this is Housewives and it's reunion strategy, but there is something to be said for the fact that it does feel calculated and strategic, and so too does some of the lack of support that Kyle says she didn't feel from her friends. I mean, the situation is really fucking awkward. She's saying she doesn't want her friends. She's saying she's upset at her friends for not defending her. But like, one could argue that Rinna defended you. How well did that go? I don't think well for Kyle. I assume that Kyle really disliked the things that Rinna said about Kathy, right? ... Wasn't that very bad for your relationship with Kathy? ... Don't we not want our friends to come for our sister in that way? ... Now, if I was Kyle, I would have an understanding of, due to a decades-long, difficult, tumultuous, extremely up-and-down dynamic with my a big sister, I might feel a certain way, and that way might feel a little bit heard when people are going ham on my sister because I might feel like I'm getting defended in some way. But also, if a huge issue in her estrangement from her sister was her sister saying, you did not support or defend me against other people in the cast, why are you a year later still saying more people should have stood up for me against Kathy? I thought the whole issue with you and Kathy that was being resolved was the fact that you were sort of moving on from this. And the fact that she's like literally appearing at the reunion, some of this stuff isn't totally adding up here. I don't know if I'm the only one thinking it. And again, Kyle's in my top five. I love Kyle. Am I a Kyle apologist at points? Yes. Not all the time. Not 24/7. Just like 22/5. You know, it is what it is. But also, I find it fascinating to talk about her because I think she's a complicated person. I'm not going to deny the reality of the complications that I observe or, you know, maybe project. It's just the things I think when I watch her on TV after 1,736 years, you know, and also hours, depending. It's just the nature of it. I find Kyle to be, in the words of Connor Roy, a curio and someone who I really genuinely empathize with. And I feel like I understand. And a part of that understanding is like, cool, I understand how you feel, what you're going through with Mauricio. Obviously, the continued trauma and difficulty in making her way through the loss of her eternal best friend and sister, Lorene. Just the struggle that she talked about experiencing and how she was trying to sort of disconnect from the reality of such a great and grave loss, and like whether or not she's like lying down on the couch all day or how to get up and trying to sort of ignore the reality. All of that is incredibly valid and I think important for people to hear. I'm so glad that we bore witness to the event for Lorene, which seemed to be, you know, a memorial to her and a way to honor her and to honor her family who was in attendance, and to recognize her life, which should not be defined by her death, but also to share information and resources to people, and to potentially open up a conversation about suicide awareness and prevention that I think is incredibly important and beneficial to a lot of people, not just the people in the room. Sun, obviously, his family has been touched by suicide because of her father's death, and also to the greater audience. I think that is an example of information and the power that some of the storytelling can do. And I think Kyle is complicated and she is genuinely going through a lot. And this Morgan situation is confounding to me. I don't understand what it is that Kyle is ultimately trying to communicate. Feels like she's putting a lot of the responsibility in the lap of like gossipy, I don't know, Bravo viewers or something, which doesn't feel entirely genuine to what she herself shared in that music video, the tattoo stuff, you know, the Hills Have Eyes, meaning like the Beverly Hills fans and viewers are aware of the closeness of her friendship with Morgan. Like some of this is just, I'm not entirely sure what Kyle is trying to communicate sometimes, because it feels like she's like showing us one thing and then being like, just kidding, it's your fault if you think something as a reaction to what I'm showing you, which I think is sort of like a difficult dance to all of this. All of which is to say, like, Kyle is complicated. So is everybody on that goddamn couch for differing reasons. And can we just take a moment to talk about how beautiful that set was? Sweet Lord, gorgeous. While I was honestly distracted throughout the episode by watching Dorit's cape, and I saw the recent Broadway revival of Into the Woods, and it was, and I did in fact play Cinderella's stepmother at Marymount Manhattan's main stage production, and thank you so much if you were in attendance for that. But I just, while I did find her ensemble to be a look, it was hard to look away from, and not maybe for the reasons that she assumed it would be. The set itself was gorgeous. I don't know if this is like the next generation of housewife sets, and surely it can't be, because we survived the Salt Lake City set. So I don't know if this is like franchise specific, but I loved what they did with Orange County, the new high tech version. And this was stunning. Like the video, the photos of people's outfits, aside from Dorit, which I think is kind of an exception, like Crystal's dress was stunning. Garcelle's dress was stunning. The way that the imagery balanced with like the high tech kind of background of it all looked unbelievable to me. It felt like they were really investing a couple shackles in showing off BH, which I was extremely into. I'd be curious if they would do that for other franchises. Like maybe New Jersey is just like the Italian countryside, maybe like old footage of Joe Giudice making some tomato sauce or something in the background. Speaking of, by the way, I did record a Patreon live reaction to the New Jersey trailer, which is on the Patreon right now. Boy, was that a journey. Somehow I was able to connect it to Kyle. The way my brain chemistry works is a fascinating journey. Listen, this is just part one. I got to watch part two. I got to record a part two. So you're getting like 1700 episodes this weekend. They're probably going to pop up at different times. So mazel tov to all of us for that. And thank you so much. Did I even talk about part one? What did I even express? I don't know. Some things. I've also had people request doing a whole sort of like list of the things I did in Europe and recommendations and maybe things I wouldn't recommend, like being the victim of a crime is probably at a beautiful piazza, Piazza Navone, which I thought was Navona, but no, so I'm the worst Italian. I think it's Navone. I couldn't tell you. Anyway, I heard it's beautiful. I didn't really get a chance to see it on account of my phone being stolen, but just kind of living in a state of shock and having an emergency espresso. and then probably some cava. Who are we kidding? Anyway, so thanks to your patience for this episode. And don't you worry, there will be more to come with part deux of Beverly Hills and Miami reunion, which I'm excited to watch. I really don't know how I'm going to feel about this whole like Marcus Jordan thing of like, I guess him saying some shit about the cast. I do think it's going to err on the side of nothing burger versus like the lead up, i.e. like Page Six pieces. I don't think it's going to be as bad as what was seemingly expected or anticipated by some of the housewives doing advanced press, but I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. So normal, I change your mind based on new information. Am I right? Anywho, shout out to anybody watching Love is Blind season 6. Also, I did stay on top of Traitors while I was away. And I did get a VPN. So I finally did. I am so thankful to that free trial and watched the Traitors. And then somehow accidentally, thanks to like Peacock or whatever, it led directly into House of Villains. And for some reason, I could not watch Housewives, but I was able to watch House of Villains while like getting ready for the ballet and for jazz in a 12th century cave and other things that I did in Paris and otherwise. And I have to tell you, I know this is like well after the fact, but that is also kind of my vibe. If you haven't watched House of Villains, I assumed it was going to be like stupid dumb. I didn't watch a single second of it until I was in Paris and then it just popped up and I continued, you know, go straight into the next show. It's a fun show. It was genuinely LOL'd several times. Joel McHale was a great host. I do highly recommend it. And also, if you haven't seen the Traitors finale and reunion, I don't know that the reunion, I need to rewatch the reunion. I don't know that the reunion really like made me feel a lot, but the finale definitely did. Like the gasps that I was letting out in like the last 10 minutes of the Traitors finale, oh boy. Oh boy, was that some genuinely enjoyable TV. So anywho, thanks again for being patient. Au revoir and other stuff. Join the Andy's Girls Patreon, number one way to support the pod, get exclusive bonus episodes like that New Jersey live reaction and so much more. Also did a little bit of a deep dive into all the lawsuits. I missed all the lawsuits that were filed while I was away. So in that Patreon Kiki with my friend Greg, which we recorded our last night in Rome, I do also get into the nitty gritty with some of the Brandy of it all and the Rachel and the Jackson Brittany alleged separation situation, etc. And somebody else is suing somebody. So I got into all of that. There's a lot of legalities. But thanks again, guys. Oh my gosh, what a journey I have ahead of me with all of the episodes I have to catch up on. I'm excited to be caught up and I'm excited for the episodes we have ahead. So in the meantime, thanks so much for listening. Follow me on Instagram, Allegedly Threads, at Dame Galley. And I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.